It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host, Don Wyatt. Hello, Don.
Happy to be here. Good afternoon.
Well, it's another wonderful day, hot in Oklahoma. We're with Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise, and we'd like to direct your attention to our website, which is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. And lots of good information there. We are broadcasting from Oklahoma. A lot of the information that's on that website is specifically addressing state issues, but you're going to find a lot of information that will be useful to you in your own state, particularly if your state is fighting health insurance exchanges and what the public calls Obamacare, which is really the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. There is also lots of information there about new urbanism, Agenda 21, sustainable development, and the other types of efforts such as fusion centers. So we're just going to ask you to check out the website. Don, we're in the process of having that website is changing hosts, and you know right. that sometimes you'll have a little blip in there, and sometimes it's available, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, they bounce a little bit for a little while, but it'll stabilize.
It will stabilize, so please be patient. If you find that you visit the site one time, it's not available, keep checking back, because something miraculous will happen, and there it is again. And Don is wearing two hats. He's also with the Tulsa 912 Project, which is an active organization in the state of Oklahoma. And that organization is actively pursuing candidates for office.
We are. We have a number of things on our plate right now. We've been very involved in national political issues, controversial issues, if you will, for the last 3 years. About 2 years ago, we started to drill down and get very educated, informed, and active with our state issues. And we spent a good bit of time traveling down to the Capitol, and you, Amanda, were kind enough to teach us an awful lot of the ground rules that we needed to get that effort underway. And what we're doing now that the legislative session has recessed for this year is we're trying to pay a lot more attention and learn a lot more about our county and city and municipality and board and authority issues.
Authorities, boards, and commissions,
exactly.
The real government.
Yep.
And we would encourage our listeners, no matter where you are, is that you also get involved at the local level. That is where most of the activities that are stripping your liberties are actually taking place. And in the state of Oklahoma, one example of the benefit of getting involved was in Edmond, where a grassroots group got together, started addressing the adoption of sustainable development policies and the invitation of ICLEI into Edmond, Oklahoma's planning, and the citizens rose up, protested, and ICLEI was thrown out of Edmond, and the citizens have, in essence, had their voices heard at the city level. Same thing as same activity is stirring in Norman, Oklahoma.
Yep, and we've got to get that same kind of momentum building here too.
Yeah, well, here is Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is one of the largest of the larger. There are two large metropolitan areas, predominantly in the largest in Oklahoma. A lot of the counties, 77 counties, are rural, which is a wonderful thing to be. But we're broadcasting from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and what we're going to talk about today is a little different than what OK Safe normally addresses. This is not a state issue. This is a county issue. And we're going to be talking about, and Don's going to be leading the conversation about the Tulsa County budget process, which we're in the midst of right now. Possibly your city and your county can relate to this. And this is a lesson in why it's important for citizen involvement at the local level. The county is going through a budgetary process right now, and by golly, the county assessor is asking questions about the details of the budget, and the budget without details is being passed, voted on by a board.
Yeah,
so
it's bizarre.
Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Describe Tulsa County.
Let me back up even one step before that and tell you how we got started in our own effort. We launched a thing called a local taxes task force as a result of some battlefield training that we sat with the American majority on about 2.5 months ago. And that inspired us to start looking at things local. We began to realize that our city budget amounts to $600+ million, and that our county budget amounts to somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million. And so it's not chump change, and it comes directly out of our pockets. And if we don't care, we're just kind of asleep or stupid. So we decided it was time to care and prove that we were neither. So we formed the task force, and we started doing an awful lot of research and learning and attending meetings. And we were fortunate that we caught the crest of this budgeting wave, because it was we just happened to be at the right place at the right time to catch the budget starting to percolate out the bottom end of the system.
It's a process.
It is a process, and I'll go into that process in greater detail in just a second. But in the meantime, we had already created a blog that we call boondoggleblog.com for us to have a tool in place. It was launched about 9 weeks ago, and it's up and running, and it's sustaining some pretty high hit volumes, particularly in the last week, because we're posting information there about issues that are awakening local citizens to things that they never would have guessed was going on.
Well, what you're saying is you're actually looking at what Tulsa County is doing.
Exactly. And we're going to be looking at the city as well. We haven't gotten any meaningful blogs posted yet about the city, and since it's 10 times bigger than the county, clearly we have to pay attention there too. But we just happen to be in the right place at the right time to delve into the county activities. So here's what happens. Counties are like all governments. They need money to run. And most local communities provide funding for their schools and for their county and for their fire and public safety and parks, all those kinds of things, through a variety of means, the bulk of which are usually what we would loosely call property taxes. Now, property taxes are probably more accurately or correctly known as ad valorem taxes. Ad valorem being Latin words meaning at the value, literally. But what it really means is it's an attempt to have each person pay a tax based on what value his assets represent vis-a-vis another person. So if you own a house worth $100,000 and your friend across the street owns a house worth $200,000, all other things being equal, fairness would make you expect to pay more tax on the $200,000 than on the $100,000.
Unless you're the former mayor. We won't discuss. We won't get into that. All right.
The exceptions are endless. They are. Okay, so that's the general concept. Now, bearing down on that in an effort to try to understand how that's done and how that works becomes increasingly obscure, frankly. What really happens in this county, and frankly in most counties that I'm familiar with, even in other states, the county assessor's office has the responsibility for determining what the fair market value is on all the property that will be used for levies to raise these kinds of taxes. And so the way that works is they send you out a notice once a year that says, here's what we think your property's worth this year.
An assessment.
An assessment, exactly. And that can be a pretty arbitrary number, but in most counties across the country now, it's supposed to be fair market value. Now, fair market value can be determined a lot of ways. It can be determined by a comparative market model. It can be determined by an income model. It can be determined by a cost to build or replace model. The one that's most commonly used is the sales or comparative market model. And what that says is that when your neighbor sells his house, if it had a patio and yours didn't, and it had a pool and yours didn't, you might be able to discount some of his net sale value when determining what yours is worth. But it should have some rational basis. And so that is the way you determine an assessed value. It's an effort to determine what your property is really worth. Then you get into a lot of exceptions. They provide exceptions not now for fairness so much, but as for charity. They provide a break if you're a veteran. They provide a break if you're disabled. They provide a break if you're a senior. They provide a break if you're et cetera. You get the picture. And so when you finally take all of your breaks into account, all of the what a person on a different day would call loopholes, you wind up with a net assessed value. Now, when you've learned your net assessed value, if you're not happy with it, the first thing you can do is try to provide for your benefit an informal protest. And that's usually handled in the assessor's office, meeting with one of their professionals. Now, you need to understand that the Tulsa County Assessor's Office is made up of, I think, 83 or 84 people, all of whom have gone through some pretty meaningful training in an effort to make them familiar with and aware of the mechanisms and the techniques that are needed in this area. They're kind of like real fancy real estate appraisers, or not so fancy in some cases. Now, once you've filed your informal protest, if you're still not happy with the outcome, and quite frankly, my experience is they very rarely budge an inch in those informal protests, then the next thing that you can do is you can file a formal protest, and that goes to a group called the Equalization Board, and that introduces us to a new piece of the fiefdom. These are little czars that get appointed. There are three of them in our county. They get appointed, and the nature of their appointment is pretty obscure. One of them is appointed by our Board of County Commissioners. That's kind of straightforward. You can kind of understand that. Another one is appointed by the State Tax Commission. That's a little bit like having IRS appoint one of them. That's to give you some concept of what that's about. And then the third one is appointed by the district judge or judges. That's a little bit like having the Supreme Court appoint one of them. So it's a really strange method that they've got set up for that. And I can tell you that in our current structure, the three people in that position represent two Democrats and one Republican. This is in a rather heavily Republican county and a heavily Republican voting record. And so now you percolate up through the fiefdoms and the czar realms, and you discover that some of the leftover single party rule is still in place. So that's the first thing you realize. And their mission in life is to hear your protest and to render a judgment. And after they've rendered judgment, there are no more administrative appeals. Your next step, if you take it, is through the courts, and that's really expensive and really time-consuming. I sat in on an equalization board meeting last week that was handling almost all commercial protests. These were fairly large businesses in the Tulsa County area, and I watched the Equalization Board grant dramatic reductions in assessed value to every single applicant, and the total of the assessed value that they gave away that day was probably in the vicinity of $150 million. Now, I've also sat in meetings where they were hearing residential applications, and the frequency with which they'll grant even a token reduction on a residential protest is really rare.
I'm going to interject here. I'm going to tell you that my husband and I did protest our property taxes, our ad valorem taxes, back in the early 90s, which would have been a completely different board than who's here, I hope, is a different board. And we were successful, accidentally successful, in reducing our property tax. And it was after I said, you know, we bought this house, and we bought it from two lawyers. a he and a she, but it was two lawyers, and they one of the ways they sold the house by owner, for sale by owner, was showing the property taxes. Well, it was the very next year or 2 years later that the property tax jumped tremendously, and we couldn't understand it. And we'd been doing all kinds of things. So we finally went down to the Equalization Board and submitted a formal protest, and I finally, out of frustration, told the board, I said, I don't know how they did it, but the two lawyers who lived there somehow got their property taxes down. And here we are telling you why we can't. Yeah. And the guy on the board said, well, I'm a lawyer. And so I've turned my, but what did get our property tax reduced was saying we had termite damage, which did reduce the value of it, and we had a roof leak.
Yeah.
So there's a little hint.
Both good things.
Those are hints.
If you happen to have your home built right next to a freeway, they'll give you a break for that, I've learned. But if you're just wanting to say that, you know, my builder didn't make my house as nice as the neighbors, I've listened to dozens and dozens of those personal residential protests, and they rarely budge on them. So here's the moral of the story. If you've got $100 as the total assessed value for the county, and all the taxes are going to have to be raised from that total assessed value, and you got one of the players in there that gets his reduced from $20 to $10, now everybody else is going to have to pay more tax to take up that slack. And the moral that I was leading up to is that we in the personal property are paying a much higher share than we should.
So if you're in the commercial, if you own commercial property, you're in like Flint.
Well, there's two reasons for that, I'm sure. One is that they can hire the resources to plead their case more effectively. They're always represented by some lawyer, whereas the homes are usually represented by the owner themselves. And the other reason is I just think that the numbers are big, and they tend to just cut breaks. They probably know somebody that knows somebody. I'm not sure, but it just doesn't seem right. I can tell you that I own a piece of property here in Tulsa County, and I also still own, unfortunately, a piece of property in Pima County in Arizona. My Pima County property has an assessed value of nearly twice what my property here does. So if my property here is worth a dollar, my property there is worth $2. But I can also tell you that the taxes that I'm paying in property tax in Arizona are half what my property taxes are here in Tulsa County. The moral of that story is Tulsa County is the highest taxed rate county in the state of Oklahoma and is in the top third tax rate of all counties in the entire country, including places like New York and New Jersey and L.A. and Hollywood and Seattle and Chicago. You add all of those together, Tulsa still pays tax at a real estate property taxes at a rate that's in the top third.
That just can't be true, Don, because they're always complaining about how little money they have and what good stewards they are of it, and why, by golly, we need to have another tax, such as a river tax. And
we must be getting close to a break, because I see the smile in your face as you say such things.
I just cannot believe it. They wouldn't be denying.
It's also amazing to me how many people I talk to that have lived in Oklahoma most, if not all, of their lives, or maybe generations. And one of the things that nearly everybody will universally tell me is our taxes here are really low. They really believe they are. They're really dead wrong about that. And I think we just have a responsibility to learn the facts and get people better educated, because we are not turning our dollars over en masse to good stewards of them. And I can tell you, as we get into more detail, exactly how and why.
Does Tulsa County collect taxes and distribute it to other counties?
There is some of that. It's very nominal, but there really is some of that. They have certain activities for which each county is obligated to collect some tax, and then it's kind of a regional or even a statewide activity that they're trying to fund with that. But that's by far the inconsequential part of it. The bulk of it is here.
So you're saying it's not enough to justify having such a high tax rate?
Absolutely not.
All right. And if people are interested in pursuing this, we're going to give the website TulsaCounty.org. That's TulsaCounty.org. And if you go to that website, you can find the schedule for the meetings for the Equalization Board, which is the board you just described, the Excise right. Board meetings and the Budget Board meetings.
Yeah, we're going to come back and explain what those other boards are here in just
What they are. But I'll tell you that Tulsa County is one of 77 counties in the state of Oklahoma, and we have three county commissioners, which are elected. And in Tulsa County, total number of elected county officials, number eight. There are eight.
Yeah.
And by statute, you're probably going to get into this, but our county is what's called a budget county.
That's budget right. Budget board county.
Right. Board. So the county commissioners and the county elected officials, those eight people, in addition to their normal jobs, are also automatically a member of the Tulsa County Budget Board.
Correct.
So it's one of those authorities, boards, and commissions.
Exactly.
And I thought I turned my phone off. There it is. I have to call. But my apologies. But so we have this board, this eight-member board, and the board meets routinely. You can see that schedule on the TulsaCounty.org website. Click on the little government log, and it will bring up county meetings. And these are publicly announced meetings. And Don, I bet the ones you've attended have not been heavily attended by the general public.
They have not been. In fact, another colleague and I went to sit in on a budget board meeting on June the 13th, which was to review and discuss and approve the county budget. And I posted a blog that described that meeting on boondoggleblog.com. If you go to that website and just scroll down just a short ways on the home page, you'll see one called Budget Board Approves County Budget. Go look at that, and you'll see not only some explanation, comment, and description, but you can actually play the audio of that actual board meeting. And it was an eye-opening experience, to say the very least. They proposed a budget that has approximately 120 typographical and syntax and semantic errors in it. One of the elected officials' name was actually misspelled at the top page of his department's subsection in the budget. It was pretty apparent that nobody had read it, nobody had looked at it, with only one exception, and that was our assessor, Ken Yazel.
And did they pass this board,
yeah,
this budget?
They did. 7-1, the dissenting vote being Ken Yazel. And if you listen to that recording that we've got there, long about 19 minutes and 45 seconds into it, you can hear them submit a motion to approve, a second, and then the roll call vote that was 7-1.
And that was to approve a budget that had questions by one of the board members. And did his questions have to do with the lack of detail, financial detail
That was one of them, and there were several others. It's wonderful to listen to his comments and his questions, because they are legitimate, and we've done more research and have extended those. We'll probably get into more detail about that right after the break.
Well, you would think that an assessor, since that's his job, would have an understanding of what
exactly
to look for in a financial report.
Exactly.
And just real quick, where do the figures come from? This is a budget includes requests for money, which is appropriations. And
those were rolled up to the budget board from various departments.
Okay, so they would just submit their budget request.
Yeah, and there's usually meetings to explain or inquire, I guess, at least technically.
Is one of the things that they have to disclose is their beginning balance of funds or carryover funds from last year?
Wish it were.
It is not. So you're saying wish it were, which means it is not included?
That's correct.
So they don't have to start up with the beginning check balance?
That's correct.
Well, how can you do? I was an ops manager for in a large retail establishment, and you always had to, when we did the annual budget, you always had to say what your current inventory was, whether that was the inventory of your bank balance or your inventory, so you know what to start. They do not have to disclose their beginning bank balance.
They don't.
So carryovers from prior years are all just washed away.
Well, it's not clear what happens. According to the statute, it's supposed to be recollected and then redistributed, but I don't think that's happening either.
All right. And that, whose money is this?
Mine.
Your
and yours.
And yours. All right. We're going to ask you to stick around through the bottom of the hour. This is America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio, and we're discussing the Tulsa County budget process. Very interesting. Stick around.
This is Bruce DeLay for Excel Firearms Training Center. You know, a life-threatening situation can occur without warning and force you to react quickly to protect yourself and your loved ones. How will you react in a stressful situation? Excel Firearms Training Center can provide you with the training you need to obtain your Arizona Concealed Carry Weapons Permit. Our four certified instructors have decades of professional firearm training experience, and they are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Your course will begin with classroom training at our facility in Sierra Vista, followed by hands-on weapons training at our firing range near Tombstone. You'll get the 8 hours of concealed carry weapons training required before you can even apply for your concealed carry permit. To register for your class, contact Marty Hargraves at 678-0323. That's 678-0323. Or for just more information, call William Samadi at 458-8571. 458-8571. We'd like you to visit our website. That's superquality.com for all the dates and schedules of classes. Excel Firearms Training Center, preparing you for the unthinkable.
Do you need to promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Money!
Money, 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 money
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with my co-host Don Wyatt, and we are discussing money, 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 specifically Tulsa County budget board meetings approving a budget with no detail. It sounds like there's no detail. And by golly, when you get on the TulsaCounty.org website and you want to look, as a public citizen, you want to look at the draft budget, like you can see on the state level, you can't find a draft budget.
Yep. They had no copies of this to be passed out to the public. They, in that board budget board meeting, they did in fact go into public hearing for about 45 seconds and then closed it. And so the
you didn't get up there and get your copy during the 45
I
seconds?
Didn't. It's, I tried.
Well, may I ask what they did in 45 seconds?
There was a period of about 15 seconds of silence, and then they started the motions to close the public hearing meeting. So they went back into executive role or executive meeting where the public is not supposed to speak.
But you can sit in there and listen.
We sat and listened, yes.
All right. So these people are sitting at a table.
And you can hear all that on the recording that's out there on Boondoggle Blog of that meeting.
Boondoggle Blog, and it's posted what day?
I posted that...
June 13th?
No, I think it was June the 20th.
June the 20th.
When it actually got out there, but it was on the. It was describing the meeting from June the 13th.
All right. So all people are trying to do is actually find the details of the draft budget for Tulsa County and examine the details. And it sounds like the county assessor is asking for those details too, and they are not forthcoming.
That's correct. There is a lot of detail. I don't mean to say that there aren't any numbers in this 200. Plus page document.
How do you know it's 200 pages? Where did you get
it? Well, I got a copy of it.
You did? Okay. All right, so one can be had.
One can be had, but not from normal channels, I guess is the right way to put
it. But it should be from normal channels.
Absolutely. It should be on the web.
It should be.
But it isn't. And so what I can confirm for you is that there's a lot of concerns that I would have as a businessman for many years and familiar with accounting principles, the general accepted accounting principles and several others. And I documented those concerns when I was preparing to talk to the excise board. That's the next thing you need to know. Once the budget board has approved the budget, which they did by 7-1 vote on June the 13th, that budget then is submitted to the excise board for approval. And the words that they tend to use for that process are to accept and file. And that means that that budget has to be, depending on the word you choose, approved or accepted and filed before July 1st, because July 1st is when the budget takes effect.
That's the beginning of the fiscal year for Tulsa County.
Now, that's right.
Just for our listeners' education, the Equalization Board is a 3-member appointed board. And the excise board is the exact same three people.
It's the exact same three people. So
only they flip the chair and the vice chair.
They do. And so the excise board is then responsible for approving the budgets. But then after the budgets have all been approved, the excise board has the statutory obligation to figure out how much tax to levy to all of the property holders in the county.
To fulfill the budget.
And they do that in an absolute absence, as far as I can determine, of knowing all of the budgets that are involved, all of the funds that are involved. There's just a select subset of those funds that are even disclosed on the budget, and in the absence of knowing current balances.
Now, let me just right now, when you're talking, going through my mind is that equalization board meeting that you attended where the commercial property taxes were allowed to be lowered.
Yes.
And the residential property taxes were not.
Yes.
All right. So we can kind of see where the budget's going to go.
You bet. It's going to slam the middle guy.
The residential owners make up the shortfall in the ad valorem taxes.
Right.
All right. Continue.
Okay. So the ultimate responsibility of the excise board is to determine this tax rate. Now, the word they use for that is millage. And it's a term that you don't hear often outside of the property tax discussion. And all it really is, it's a tax rate. If you think about this as the rate at which you have to pay for a gallon of gas or the rate at which you pay for your sales tax, it's the same thing. It's the rate of $1 per $1,000 of net assessed value. That's one mil. And that the mill means 1,000, so that's where the term comes from. You're more used to hearing these things described as either cents or percents, or those are the more common ways that taxes are described, but these are always described as mills. And the tax rate in Tulsa County adds up to about 124 to 128 mills, depending on what school district you're in.
Per thousand?
Per thousand. So if you've got a, and that thousand is your net assessed value. And so there's some monkey business that they play in those numbers. But the upshot of it is that millage rate is the ultimate determinative factor for how much your tax is going to be.
And the county can determine the millage rate, or is that by statute?
Well, most of it is variable. And the excise board can and should determine it. Some of it in this county, strangely and bizarrely enough, is fixed permanent millage. A couple decades ago, the voters in this area saw fit to set some millage rates for certain specific purposes, like the vocational training centers, the community college, the health department and activities, and the libraries, the city-county libraries. And so those guys are entitled to a certain millage, regardless of whether they need it or not, and regardless of whether the outcome of that millage goes up dramatically every year, and it has.
So fixed millage rate on those government entities, government-funded entities, they do not go up and they do not go down.
No, but the real problem is that they don't fluctuate based on need or requirement or existing reserves or anything else.
And we have empty classrooms in the technology schools.
We do. And those four entities combined had a balance in the bank in this last year of almost $200 million.
And they did not have to disclose that in the appropriations
process.
They don't.
And they'll come right back and say they have to have more money and, in fact, raise tuition. It's really pretty bizarre the way that's all done. The VOTEC organization has approximately 18 months operating budget sitting in the bank, and yet they're still demanding the same pay.
And what is let's talk about Dennis Semler's job. What is his job?
He's basically just a tax collector. He doesn't determine the millage rates.
Give our listeners his title.
He's the county treasurer, and once the excise board has determined the millage rate to apply, then bills get sent out to everybody, and those taxes are collected by the county treasurer.
By the treasurer.
The treasurer.
Would you say that the county treasurer should know the beginning balances or have an idea of what these beginning balances are in those four protected governmental entities?
I would go a step further and say that those entities are responsible by statute for not only knowing those numbers, but disclosing them and taking them into account in their budget and planning. I think if I read the code correctly of Title 68, Section 3004, it's a felony for them to not do that. But if they know it, they're certainly not being required to disclose it to we, the public.
Isn't it the treasurer's job, though, to know where the money is?
Well, you'd think so, and I think by and large, that is probably true, but I can also tell you that there's an awful lot of money in accounts that are not reported and balances that are not disclosed.
How could that be?
Because I once had a guy that I was trying to sell some accounting software to, and he was a union official, and he looked at me with steely blue eyes, and he said, "A man likes to keep his own set of books."
Really?
And it occurs to me that there may be some aspect of that going on. I don't know. In any case, you can compare the kind of disclosure we have in Tulsa County with the disclosure that they have in Oklahoma County and get a frame of reference for all of this.
Is Oklahoma County a budget county?
I don't think I know that for certain. But in any case,
budget board county. Yeah,
I guess I don't know that for certain.
We don't know that.
I don't know that.
Whether they have adopted it. It would make sense because that's the other large
urban area
in Oklahoma. So there are two that are would be common sense would dictate if Tulsa is in Oklahoma County.
What I can tell you is that in the data that they disclosed in Oklahoma County, they had a general fund revenue of about $67 million and total revenue, that is all these other funds that I keep saying need to be accounted for, of $166 million. So there's about $100 million in these other funds that are not in the general revenue fund, exactly. Now, when you look at the Tulsa County budget, the same corresponding number for Tulsa County in the general fund revenue is $54 million. So it's about 80%, which is surprisingly high considering that our population ratio is probably 2 to 1. I think Oklahoma City is about twice the size of Tulsa County, but I said Oklahoma City. I shouldn't have. That's Oklahoma County.
It's Oklahoma County. Yeah. We're talking counties.
Anyway, if all that were true, then the number that we would be looking for Tulsa County, if the extrapolations were the same, and I'm not saying they are. I don't know. I can't get my hands on the numbers. But if they were the same, then this budget probably represents about 41% of the dollars that are actually used by Tulsa County. And so it's a pathetic subset of what's really going on. We used to, in business, have to write all kinds of rules and laws and regulations to keep businesses from overstating how good the business had been doing. And that was the natural inclination of business, is to overstate it and make the shareholders happy. It is clear to me that it is the natural inclination of government to understate it. And they don't want to disclose to the taxpayers just how big they have grown and how extensive and massive their scope is.
According to your figures, and I'm looking at a document, you've itemized some concerns with the budget copy that you were able to get a hold of, and you looked at it. And if you were to apply that same ratio of revealed and unrevealed funds, it would leave about $79 million, according to your calculation, that's unaccounted for.
It could be. Yeah.
Could be. If it's an 80%.
And that's not even taking into account the on-hand balances. That's just reporting the revenue streams expected that are not reported.
Now, when you're calling it on-hand, that's what they're carrying. The entities are unspent that they're carrying forward that they do not have to give an accounting for when they're making their requests for appropriations.
Exactly.
So it's like they start from scratch all over again, and yet this money is someplace.
Yep, and it's been growing rapidly.
Is it gaining interest?
I don't really know the answer to that, but I do know that the county income on interest has plummeted. And so if it's gaining interest, that's also being concealed, because the county expectation on interest income is dropping from $2 million a year to $100,000+. And so there would obviously be more interest income than that on the $190 million that we know is on hand for those four entities that I mentioned on fixed permanent millage.
Do you know, maybe you haven't gotten this far, are those entities allowed to invest the money that the unspent appropriated funds, are they allowed to invest it?
I have not been able to find out yet what they are permitted to do.
As a taxpayer and somebody who's lived here for quite a long time, it would be nice if that there is this excess money that they didn't need or didn't spend, is that that they are not allowed the discretion to make the decision that they will keep it in safekeeping or from it. They should issue rebates.
They absolutely should. They should do two things. One is use that money. It's been allocated for them. They've collected it. We know what it's supposed to be used for. Use it and quit asking us to give them a full paycheck the next year when they don't need it. And secondly, they should reduce that fixed millage rate request. Either they as a department or a unit could do it, or the excise board could do it. But these continued guaranteed paychecks that keep rising and rising and rising when it's not needed and the classrooms aren't filled just doesn't make sense.
It is job security, though.
It is. And another thing I'll comment on is that the budget information down in Oklahoma County included a lot of what I call non-monetary metrics. They would disclose how many employees were in each one of these departments. And as a longtime reader of financial statements, I can usually use one number to guess another. If you tell me in any major American corporation how many employees they've got, I can guess within 5 or 6% what their gross dollar volume probably is, and vice versa, because there's a pretty direct relationship. About $100,000 per person is what you'd probably see.
As a cost?
As a cost. And that's not salary alone. That includes other costs that are directly attributable and directly related to salary.
Benefits and retirement.
Yeah, benefits, retirement, and other support costs, fixed overhead, and that sort of thing. So if you take a number like that and that were disclosed, you would be able to very easily see that the dollars are being underreported on the Tulsa County budget because there aren't enough dollars there to pay for the people that they've got. For example, there's 84 people that are in the assessor's office, but this budget only shows about $3 million needed to operate that assessor's budget, and you know that's not possible.
The
assessor knows, by the way, that they are under-reporting his funds, and that was one of his complaints. So I'm not blaming or criticizing the assessor. He's trying to correct the disclosure process.
Are these numbers expressed in FTEs, full-time equivalents, or is it actually by number of employee?
Down in Oklahoma County, where they're disclosing it, I believe it's actual headcount.
Actual headcount. So you don't know if they're full-time, part-time?
I don't know that.
That's interesting. Isn't it supposed to be by FTE?
Well, you would assume that there are a lot of ways to get non-monetary metrics that are useful and helpful and enlightening, but they're not making any attempt to do that here at all.
All right. this is probably not very interesting for a lot of people because it's not something that they can go out and rally against, but it is how...
I'll predict this. If you go look in your local government the way I just have, I'll guarantee you you're going to find this. It may be bigger and it may be smaller in scope than ours, but it's going to be the same.
And yet we drive around the county. The county roads are in better shape than the city roads, of course, but this thing is probably replicated throughout government's financial accounting principles. Not always, but I'm going to say that Tulsa County, I've lived here for quite a while, and Tulsa County has always been somewhat of a contentious place to live as far as the government has been there's been a what I would call a two warring or two battling interests. One has to be what has generally been called the establishment or the elite, and the rest is everybody else.
That's right.
And
that's not uncommon either.
That is not uncommon, but it also is that there's a very close-fisted approach to government in Tulsa County, and they have a really poor reputation as far as openness and transparency.
Exactly.
And this county has an assessor who's been trying to raise red flags and get some help on this, but there's a curtain comes down when it comes to getting information when you're asking for information that has to do with specifics. You do get a runaround.
That's right.
I asked when I attended the excise board meeting on a Friday here, and the board members were up front, and it's a three-person board, a man named Morris, a man named Ketchel, and a woman and named Gaines.
Right.
All right. And that's the same three people who are on the
Equalization Board.
This was an excise board meeting. And apparently we learned later when the assessor was actually able to express his opinions or his concerns about this budget, which again was still the topic of discussion. And that meeting went on for 30, 40 minutes. Well, later on, we found out that was the longest amount of time
that they'd ever given him to talk.
And the assessor's been in office since 2002 or three. 2003.
He voted in 2002, yes.
So in 7 years, this is the most he's been able to have a say, because there's this wall of, now whether they intended to be secret or not, it appears there's a wall of secrecy. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing was one of the chairman is an older man, which I respect age and authority and knowledge. There's a lot of wisdom with the gray hair. We're supposed to rise up in honor of gray hair. This man could not hear.
Couldn't hear anything that was being said.
No, he could not hear, and in fact would have to have the man sitting next to him translate what somebody said from the audience or somebody else. So it's not, you know, there are things as hearing aids. There are ways to still function if you have a slight disability. It'll turn out the guy's 89 years old. And has a hard time hearing, and yet he is making monumental decisions without hearing all of the details.
That's exactly right.
And he was shutting off the meeting.
Yep.
Just said,
That's it.
I made my decision. Bang. Yeah. That's done.
Call the vote.
I found that, as a citizen, I found that very disturbing. And it's not meant to be disrespectful. There are a lot of sharp 89-year-olds up. Henry Kissinger's 89.
He's still cranking out the books, and he seems to be able to hear.
Unfortunately. And people are listening to him, unfortunately. But I found it very disturbing that was the type of board activity. And then they were the equalization board, and they're supposed to hear from residents, residential owners, and commercial property owners. So who knows how much he's actually getting information.
I can also tell you that if you decided that you wanted to submit a citizen concern to the excise board, and so you start trying to look for a phone number to reach the board member, they won't disclose them. You can contact the Tulsa County Clerk's office, and they'll say, yeah, we have phone numbers, but we don't disclose them to the public. And I'm thinking, that's kind of strange.
That limits accountability.
And they don't have a way to mail anything to them or email anything to them. And it's as though the powers that be had decided to set up a shadow front that they could hide behind, that the public can't interact with or even understand.
Well, it's a way to disconnect from the public.
Absolutely.
The one thing that I did hear in the meeting that was a little... not a little, it was really concerning, is that millions of dollars are appropriated for the Tulsa County Industrial Authority. Millions.
That's right.
And they have no employees.
None.
So who's handling that money?
that's for next week's research, I think.
I will have to look into the Tulsa County Industrial Authority. Number one, I would love it if we actually had an industrial base here need somebody. Yeah. But it's one of those authorities, boards, and commissions that are appointed, and they are that other branch of government that actually is doing the work or has authority, and they can issue rules and regulations and make decisions by which people must comply, or to which people must comply. And yet the public has no say. Now, you can volunteer to be nominated to one of these boards, but authorities, boards, and commissions are that unelected branch of government. Yeah. And apparently, if the Tulsa County Industrial Authority is worth millions of dollars in appropriations, but I don't know who's handling it.
Yep, exactly.
And it was those kind of questions that the assessor was asking. Where are the details on this?
Before we run out of time, let me give a couple of websites that people can go to get some additional information and research on their own. If you want to look at Oklahoma statutes, the place to go is oklegislature.gov/osstatutetitle.html.
What you can do is go to oscn.net.
That'll work too.
Yeah, just go to oscn.net. And then click on legal research, and all the statutes are there. So that's a little quicker. OSCN.net. Click on legal research, and all of the Oklahoma statutes are there, plus all 385 laws that the 2011 Oklahoma session, the legislature passed. 385. Aren't you happy, folks? We've got 385 more bills, more laws on the books in Oklahoma.
It would keep you warm if it were colder. Another place I wanted to refer people to is the assessor.tulsacounty.org/PDFs/statisticsandanalysis.pdf.
You're going to have to put that on your Boondoggle blog.
I'll put that on Boondoggle blog. I sure will. But that's a great 37-page PowerPoint slide presentation that you can teach yourself about ad valorem taxes with, and you can learn exactly how it's done, who's involved, what the mechanisms and processes are, and how it compares county to county.
So you can probably just do a search on Tulsa County Assessor.
Yes. Yep, that's how I found them at first. Yes.
Yeah, just go to word search on Tulsa County Assessor Ken Yazel, and up will come up link to a PowerPoint. And we're always encouraging, OK Safe does regular citizen involvement in the legislative process, training sessions, and if you'd like to contact us, we can travel around the state and put on that presentation. It is encouraging that some people have taken it upon themselves to create a task force to look at the taxes. This is a hot topic. It's timely creation of this task force. And if somebody is interested in joining the Tulsa County Tax Task Force, how would they reach you?
Reach me through the Boondoggle blog. You can send me a message by email through that blog by using the Contact Us section, or you can go to the Tulsa912project.com and send us a message through that website as well.
And Boondoggle is Boondoggle is what? What is a Boondoggle?
A Boondoggle is useless work paid for with public money. And so if you hear somebody say that's a boondoggle, what they're saying is that's another rat hole that we're pouring our public funds down into for no clear-cut benefit.
And what you're asking for is just full and honest and transparent disclosure of where the money is right now.
Exactly.
Your beginning balance, open up the checkbook and show where all of the money has been going.
Right.
And have an open and transparent process when you're creating the Tulsa County budget.
Precisely.
All right, that sounds reasonable. And on another note, we're about ready to end this hour of America in the Balance, and I want to remind people to go to the OK Safe blog, which is ok-safe.com blog. At ok-safe.com, click on that, and then click on the blog, and there's some information there, plus an action item. We're asking everybody, whether you're in Oklahoma or another state, is to contact your governor and ask them what is their intention with the upcoming National Governors Forum in Salt Lake City. And Don, what's going to happen at that meeting is that U.S. governors are going to be paired up with a Chinese party official, either a provincial...
Communist party official.
Communist party. That's the party. That's the one party in China. And they will have peer-to-peer exchanges on topics of mutual interest. Well, what they're doing is bypassing the federal, or let me not say bypassing, what they're doing is heading right into...
Burrowing down
into the states to create agreements.
Public-private partnerships.
So, the Chinese are looking for investments in the states. And in fact, this month, which is June 2011, there are some very high-powered meetings taking place to train Chinese chief executive officers how to maneuver the laws, get tax incentives, and develop governmental relationships so that they can come over into this country and invest in residential and commercial property. So the governors are, in July, going to be meeting at a U.S.-China Governors Forum, which, by the way, the FOIA request on this MOU, this Memorandum of Understanding, is still waiting to be responded to. But we're asking everybody to contact your governor. Ask them, number one, are you planning to attend this meeting? Number two, what is your intention? Are you going to meet with them? And are you looking to allow Chinese investment in your state's infrastructure? That's
exactly
the key word that you must ask for, because your infrastructure is going to be on the chopping block or on the sales block, and the Chinese are looking to invest
highways,
in that.
Bridges, etc.
Schools,
power lines,
healthcare
grids.
Industries. Yeah, and it's going to be sold to the public as saying this is job creation. That's not the kind of job you want. That's the music indicating the end of this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We ask you, we thank you for listening, and we're going to ask you to be, do that job of call your governor or email them. Thank you for listening, and may God bless. We'll be right back.